Ever wonder how a Comic-Con comes together? Here are two guys that know, because it's what they do every day. It's the Con Men Podcast. Now for another mediocre podcast attempt, it's Greg Adams and Puff.
It's the Con Men Podcast, and it's going to be an interesting episode for something that I'm finally going to break down and allow to happen. It's Greg Adams over here and Puff over there. Puff, you got to be excited about what you know is coming later on in this podcast.
I finally convinced you to let me do a guest announcement.
I still can't believe that I have done it, but this is probably the best forum for what we're going to do. This is a podcast that is basically put together by people who run a Comic-Con on a daily basis. We're working on something with our event GeekCon in Shreveport, Louisiana. And so what we do is we talk about different aspects to it. Today it might be an amalgamation of topics because it all comes back to one question that was asked indirectly to us. It was actually not asked to me at all, but I got drug into it. And so we're going to talk about a little bit of that. And some of exactly what we're looking at right now, because we get to do this in real time. And I think I said this a couple of weeks ago. It's sort of like a journal where after the fact, we're going to be able to like look back on this and say, oh, that's how we came to that decision type thing.
Yeah. And in fact, last week we were talking about, making tough decisions about guests, and we literally made one and got the ball rolling, and now we have a schedule for when we're going to make announcements.
Yeah, in case if you are a GeekCon fan, which there are a lot of people who are strictly fans of our event who are listening to the podcast, the goal is to hopefully start reaching out to a broader base of folks who are trying to put together their own Comic-Con, or they're working already in a Comic-Con type field, and they're maybe reaching some of the same crossroads that we have, and so they can listen to some other people talk it through. That's basically what we're doing. We're talking through struggles and ideas and answering questions. But we do have people who just come to our event who listen to this podcast, and so they'll be excited to know what you just put on the website earlier.
Yeah, I posted the schedule of every planned guest announcement as we sit here. Everybody whose name is dry on paper in your office that is confirmed to be coming to GeekCon 2020 in August. We've got it laid out of when we're going to announce those people, including our headliners, ticket on sale dates, pretty much everything you want to know so you can start planning and getting pumped with us is at geekcon.com. You can also find it on the GeekCon app, the GeekCon Facebook page, and Twitter.
We're being very transparent. This is not a secretive thing. In the past, it may have seemed like there were a lot of secrets being kept, and with some shows, it feels like there may be secrets being kept. In a lot of those cases, it's because agreements aren't completed.
Yeah.
In some cases, there literally are secrets. They're literally just keeping a secret because they're mean. we're not that way. We are making it very transparent. Here's exactly what we're looking to do. And we kind of have at least some rationale as to why we're doing each one of those. So if you take out a calendar and look at maybe some of the dates that are listed now at geekcon.com, you can see that they attach to maybe a particular holiday.
Yeah, there's a Valentine's Day announcement.
Yep. Or maybe it's not even a holiday. Maybe it's a
special event, perhaps. Like the Mudbugs Puck Wars weekend.
Yes, teaming up with our local hockey team. The Shreveport Mudbugs, we will be doing their Puck Wars weekend, which is a Star Wars weekend, and we will be making guest announcements literally at the games.
Yeah.
So those weekends, if you want to know, and they're, I think we've got it lined up to be pretty much headliner level guests.
Yeah, we have like, I guess technically, four people that we kind of put that as headliners, but the two we're going to announce at the Mudbugs game are could be considered headliners anywhere in the world at any event.
Yeah.
So we got a packed lineup. This is by far our biggest lineup ever. It is probably our most expensive lineup ever.
Oh, it is. I can trust me. Spreadsheet guy can tell you it is the most expensive ever.
And personally for me, it is the most exciting lineup we've ever had because lots of good stuff on that board.
We've got
Lots of variety, too.
We've talked about, like, our favorite guests in the past, too. And every year there's, like, one person that's in that conversation where we're trying to struggle between, oh, is it this one? Oh, is it this one? This year has multiple of those type of people, though.
There's at least 10 potential Guest of the Year award winners.
Yeah, that's actually very fair. That's a very fair assessment.
Not that the other ones are bad, but there's, like, literally 10 guys, or people,
and
I should
women.
Say, peoples, that are coming to town that are incredible humans, have done some amazing things, and just seem like a lot of fun.
And as we've ran across with some of them, as we, this is the unfair advantage to putting the event on. We have more time to maybe figure out what we want to get signed while they're here, autograph wise. And so trying to sort through, okay, well, do I want this person to sign this Funko Pop, or do I want to go get the action figure, or do I want to get a comic book, or, you know, how do I want to do this?
Yeah. Anyone that works at Chase Bank can pretty much tell you who's coming to GeekCon 2020 because you can look at my purchases of recent and, yeah, but it's going to be a good time.
It'll be great. And again, we will make a guest announcement later on in this podcast.
The first of many. And that's on top of the two we've already made.
Two announcements.
Lexi Rabe and Christopher McDonald, a.k.a. Shooter McGavin.
Yeah, Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore, who also has been in a ton of other movies, by the way.
Iron Giant.
One of those guys that you see their picture and you just go, oh, yeah, that guy. But really, Shooter McGavin is, like, that's the pinnacle.
Pew, pew.
And Lexi Rabe, of course, is Morgan Stark from Avengers Endgame, Tony Stark's daughter, I Love You 3000. She will be in Shreveport this August as well. You can see both of those online at geekscon.com and the GeekCon mobile app. And we will make that other announcement later this hour. So by the time we're done with this podcast, we will have three official guest announcements.
Yes.
And we will not, by the way, as soon as this podcast goes live, it's not like we're going right to Facebook or we're going right to the app with the information. Whoever's listening to the podcast is going to know that guest, like, days before anyone else.
Yeah, this isn't something that we're putting up simultaneously. We're this is sort of a podcast exclusive.
Yep.
Where you're going to know before the rest of the world does.
It's a thank you for downloading the podcast and subscribing.
That
and maybe
true.
We'll start doing more exclusive ones on the podcast if we get rated and reviewed on, like, Apple.
I like that.
Maybe if that starts happening, then all of a sudden we'll start doing more podcast-only announcements.
I like that.
The whole lineup will be announced strictly on podcast.
I'm fully on board with that because I have a lot to say about a lot of our guests.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a little bit. Again, going back to the whole idea, the whole point of what we do here is to talk about what it's like to go through trying to build and maintain a Comic-Con type event. And I'm going to have to start saying this disclaimer a lot more because I have heard from some people who have checked in who are doing their own Comic-Con stuff out there. It is not a one-size-fits-all world. So some of the things that we talk about that might work for us as far as what we do for our event, they're not going to be the perfect answer for everybody. We're in a weird size for what kind of show we are. There are a lot of shows bigger than we are. There are shows smaller than we are. And so when we're talking about doing a certain, for example, we're going to talk about our panel room a little bit today. Our panel room is currently 2,500 seats.
Yeah, it's huge.
There are shows who don't have that big of a panel room. They don't have access to that type of room. And we'll get further into exactly what we're looking at with ours and the troubles and those type of things. But if there's a show out there who doesn't have a panel room that large, the conversation we're going to have about ours may not apply to them right now. But there might be something else with their event that is going in the same direction that our panel room is, and this might open up the, well, what if type conversation, because that's where we are at a crossroads with what we do. So the disclaimer is, we're going to talk about some things that we see at our level, but they are not a one-size-fits-all. This is a conversation starter. Don't come here for answers. Come here for dialogue. Come here for conversation.
We can't book your show. Or, you know, because we're not there. We don't know what's going on. But, you know, some of the things that we talk about could apply to you. It could not, but it could give you an idea of a different way to look at things. And that's sort of what we're doing.
And unfortunately, there are it's a competitive business. There are people who don't like to work with other shows. They don't want to give their secrets away. They don't want to talk as openly and freely as we have talked about some of our topics. Honestly, I'm all for it. If you see something that we do that you like, hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter. We barely keep any secrets. We'll tell you exactly how the sausage is made. Go for it. That's, again, back to the transparency. Here's when the guests are going to be announced. We don't care who knows. Like, that's public knowledge.
And really, the only reason we haven't done it like this before is because we didn't have everybody on board all at one time. So it'd be like, oh, we got George Perez, and I'm trying to think who else was that year. Billy West. So we're going to announce George Perez and Billy West because we have...
And we've kind of talked about that a little bit, too, in the different ways that you learn how things work, and your market is different than other markets. So that you can chalk up the way it's going this year more to changes in the way that we operate have precipitated some new timelines for us. And so it has allowed us to take a step back and say, well, what if instead of that we did it like this? And so we're going to try it this year. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, then maybe next year we go back to a staggered, stretched out, long-form announcement schedule. But we're doing it in a very compact, quick, here's everybody, let's get it done type way.
Yeah, and again, that we can actually do that this year because we have everybody, and it's worth trying, where before it was like, all right, this paper's in, let's get it out, where it was like almost happening in real time.
Yeah, so... might go back to that kind of style in the future if this year doesn't work out. Anyways, the main focus, the main meat of today's podcast. I was tagged in a post online in a convention conversation forum. Some folks tagged me in the question of how are promoters staying ahead of competition and the saturation of the market? How do you adjust to economy rises and falls? It's a lot there to unpack, but I think that we can take it piece by piece.
Yeah.
And we've kind of already touched on the first part. So the first part is, how are promoters staying ahead of competition? The competition aspect, like we just said, I know that some people view us as competitors, but for the most part, I have subscribed to a rising tide floats all boats for a long time, ever since our first year. We've worked with other shows in our city, other shows that are existing within our city. We have worked with them to promote their event, to promote their ticket sales, to promote their guests. We work with a lot of other shows in the region right now to do the same, and using all of our platforms. It's not just that we're nice to them.
Yeah, we actually like send out app alerts like, hey, what was the one that's coming up pretty soon? The Huntsville?
Huntsville.
Yeah. Hey, this is going on. Here's their guest. They got Chris Claremont. They got this person. It's going to be awesome.
Just announced Joey Fatone.
Joey Fatone, our
good
friend
of GeekCon. He's a good brother. So
yes, he is.
We've got a show in Huntsville, Alabama, which is an eight-hour drive away. But we've got folks that live in our area that I know when you tell them that Chris Claremont's going to be in Huntsville, I personally am like, well, holy crap, Chris Claremont's coming to Huntsville.
Yeah, definitely worth the road trip.
I got to go meet him. The first thing you said was, I've got books to send. Like, that's an important thing. And we work with our friends over in Dallas with the Dallas Comic Show.
Yep.
We've got our friends in Lake Charles at SciFiCon.
Yep.
We've worked with a couple of shows in Arkansas.
We went down to New Orleans and worked with Big Easy
Con.
Big
Easy Con. So we are big fans of the collaborative efforts. And I don't know if that's staying ahead of the competition by, like, you know, it's really not competition if you're in with them.
Yeah, like, it's only competition if you make a competition. You could be a jerk to the guy that's running his show 6 months before yours, or you can work together, play nice, and help each other out. I mean, there are some groups out there that you just can't work or reason with.
Well, because they've taken the stance of, we are not interested in working with anyone else. We are isolating ourselves.
Yeah, seek and destroy. We're better, blah, blah, blah. Which is, again, to us, to me specifically, just seems dumb.
Which, but actually, going back to the Facebook thread, one of the comments that has gotten a lot of the reaction is sort of like one of those if you're an organization that goes this way, this is tongue in cheek. He says, talk crap about other shows that have been going on for a long time. Say stuff like, we're going to be the big con, the real con. Then show up to the competition shows doing all of your geo-marketing from inside the event, and then target all their guests and do the announcements during the weekend of the competitors' events to capitalize on search engine spikes, and maybe even host an off-site event with outside talent to drive people away from the competition. We've experienced a lot of this ourselves.
Yeah, there's one particular group in mind that have sort of...
These things have happened to our show.
Yeah, yeah. They've taken that approach with us.
So, which is fine, because... It just is. If that's the way that you want to do it, that's fine. I prefer, and I think we have had success, working with people. I think we had a show the first year that was happening just a couple of months behind ours. We worked with them. We did an appearance at their event. We promoted them through all of our channels. Then, you know, we've started working with SyphaCon. We've worked with the guys in Dallas and Huntsville and Arkansas. And it's all... positive in New Orleans too, and it's all I haven't had a bad experience with any of them yet.
No.
Most of the people who are doing this, they're like you. Like, they have a passion for this type of event, and they got to be crazy enough to bite off more than they can chew and to spend all these like crazy hours working on this thing and taking huge risks. They're cut from the same cloth, so have, I guess, professional courtesy.
Well, it's also sort of like a support system. You know, it's like any industry. Yes. Like, if you do the same thing, you automatically have sort of a connection and a bond with people that are doing similar jobs. And this is just that on a much larger scale. Like, all the vendors, we may not know all of them, but even the ones that are sort of strangers to us that we haven't worked with before, we all have these same conversations. And, oh, yeah, that was cool if we could do this, and we like doing this thing, and, you know, it's great seeing those guys. Like, it's the same conversation we have with everybody.
I don't think I've ever gotten an email or a direct message or anything that says, hey, I liked how you guys did this. How did you do it? That I've ever responded with, no, I'm not going to tell you. Like, I don't care who you are. How did we do it? We did it this way. We worked with this person, and we tried this, and we, you know, I'm okay with that, and... And I guess this maybe comes from, you know, we come from a radio background. That's you and I both. So we've dealt with competition like this outside of the convention world. Because the second part of this is, if you do run into somebody who is showing up at your show, trying to poach your stuff, trying to tear you down, the first rule on that side of it, the first rule in general, is to be courteous and try to work with everybody. But if there's somebody who is belligerently not working with you and aggressively attacking you, the number one rule is never punch down. If you're the champion and have the belt, you don't have to fight them until they're on your level. Number two is, if they do choose to take those tactics and don't back off, then you can either do one of two things. It depends completely on your personal makeup. You can either just turn the other cheek and do what you do better than they can do what they do, or you can do the dirty tactics that they do better than they do those. And I'm honestly not here to tell you one way or the other. The only thing that I'm here to tell you is, if you're going to choose to do one, know that you're going to be able to do it better than they do.
Just know that whatever you do, your main objective is to protect your brand.
Yes.
Don't burn down your own house to try to beat the other guy.
Right. Yep.
You got to make sure your house is still in tip-top shape before you do anything, whether it's going in attack mode or ignore or workarounds, whatever. You got to make sure your business is your top priority. Because we know people that sometimes get obsessed with, well, this guy did this to me and I got to go get him.
Yep.
And then they let their normal day-to-day business fall apart. You got to keep your eye on the ball. I mean, you can fight other battles, you can multitask, but main objective, protect your brand and your business.
And we've seen it in this industry too, where the decision is, okay, well, we're just going to, they booked them, fine, then we're going to go book this. And you book beyond your means, which is something we've spent a lot of time talking about too. You have to know your audience, you have to know your market, you have to know your venue, and if you make a decision out of anger and competition to book somebody that you have no way of handling, strictly just to rub it in someone else's face, you're probably going to run into issues.
Yeah, and it may be the end of your show, yep, or at least cripple you to the point where you can't get back to the level you were.
Yeah.
And you know, on that subject, you can outbook the other guys without breaking the bank, because you and I both know the price tag of a lot of people that do these types of shows who are relatively big names, but because of, you know, they just sometimes you have to finesse your way in there, where you can get a big-name talent without a big-name budget. I mean, there's a lot of guys you can go out and throw tons of money at that don't have the return for some of the, as much as some of the lower-level guys. See, if you want to bury the competition by booking talent, do it smartly. Just don't go off of price and emotion.
Which is a thread that actually connects the second part of this question that was asked online. Because knowing your market, we've talked about that a lot. Knowing your market is probably the answer to how do promoters stay ahead of competition and at the same time stay ahead of saturation. That's the second part. Saturation of the market. The answer to staying ahead of both is actually to know your people. Know your show, know your market. Not only your limitations, but the people who are your super users. The people who are the ones who will defend you online, the people who want to be volunteers, if you're able to use volunteers, the people who are your flag bearers. You have to know those people, but you also have to know the broad audience.
Yeah.
So
it's sort of like if you're building a house, you got to make sure your foundation is good before you start adding ornamentation and all this extra stuff. Like, you got to take care of the people, your main base of people. And then you can start building up to how can we expand, where can we expand, where is there room for growth for our event?
Yeah, and the expansion is also part of that saturation of the market. So knowing who your people are and super serving them well at the same time, because again, if you build a foundation to a house, you still got to put walls up,
yep,
and you got to have windows. And the walls and windows are people who maybe aren't your super users, but still people necessary to make your show go. So you have to know not only what the foundation is. Look, if your market has a really passionate base of anime fans, and the anime fans are going to be able to help support you at a base level, but you're doing a general pop culture show, you're still going to need to draw more people in. And I think we talked about this in depth a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So we'll leave a lot of that guest part of it to the that if you want to go back and talk about like guest dynamics and genres. There's a podcast back in the history on that one. But as far as saturation of the market goes, that's where you have to really dial into what your people want.
And what your show is, too. A
yes.
lot of times people, it starts out as a comic book show. Well, we want to expand, and then they expand too rapidly, and there's not an audience for it. So you kind of have to know what your show is, what your goal is, and where you want to go. Without direction, you're kind of shooting in the dark, and most of the time that does not work out.
Which plays off from what your market is, too. Because
yeah.
if your market, we used a big anime market as an example, but what if your market has not really a lot of an anime base, and you want to try to create an anime show, but you don't have the community to support it? You have to know what that is. Or if you do have an ongoing show that is a pop culture show that maybe leans comic book and you feel like you can expand into that anime world, that's fair as long as you don't sacrifice the rest of it, like you said about competition. Make sure that you protect the main focus. Make sure you protect
yeah.
the brand and don't disrupt it by trying to reach for something. And also know about what you're doing. So, like, personally know whatever the source material is. So if you do want to expand, if you're a comic book show and you're going to expand into an anime world, hopefully you know something about anime or can find somebody who can point you in the right direction. Because
yes.
the last thing you want to do is try to expand, overextend yourself, and book something poor that ends up hurting you in the long run.
Yeah, because there's a lot of great guests in this world, no matter what, whether you're looking at general pop culture, comic book, anime, whatever. But like everything, there's top tier guys, there's middle tier guys, there's low tier guys, and you don't want to pay top tier price for a lower tier guy, because sometimes, you know, you I'm not going to say there's agents out there that will take advantage of you.
There are agents out there who will take advantage of you.
But
there, I'll say it.
It is a business, and if you're willing to pay $10,000 for something they usually charge $3,000 for, they're not going to turn down a $10,000 check. So it's just, you know, if you dabble in something, you got to at least kind of know what pool you're swimming in.
Yeah, and that's a general rule of thumb. If we connect all of these parts of dealing with competition and saturation, just know who you are and know your limitations before you do anything drastic in either direction. The back half of this question is, how do you adjust to economy rises and falls? The dealing with economy rises, how do you adjust to economy rises? I don't know that that is necessarily... That might not be an issue.
Yeah, that's not a problem. That's a good thing for everybody.
That's not going to be an issue unless that could backfire in a way that your venue starts to become more expensive. Experience that. Other aspects of running the event start to become more expensive because as the economy rises, maybe some of the things that you're already taking advantage of, your local transportation, maybe they're going to be booked or there's new competition in the market, and so therefore you might have to pay more for the services that you've paid for in the past. That and the other part, both parts of these, dealing with the economy in an up or down economy always comes back to the budget, always comes back to the spreadsheets. Know your limitations, write them out, acknowledge them ahead of time, and do not deviate from it unless you have some kind of, I don't know, slam dunk opportunity where... If you get a gigantic star, you've already spent your budget and you spent your travel and it's all gone and you look at the spreadsheets and you see a little bit of red there and then you get a gigantic guest, the kind of guest that sells 1,000 tickets the day they're announced. If that guest comes in and says, hey, I will come do your show for just transportation and food, but you're already over in transportation and food, you have to do that. Like in those cases, those are the gambles that we look for. It doesn't happen. It rarely happens. It maybe happens 5% of the time to all shows ever of all time. But if that does happen, those are the only chances you should be breaking your budget for. Everything else in the budget needs to stay in the black. When you start to get into the red on too many lines, it doesn't matter if the economy's up or down, you're going to probably be in trouble.
Yeah, and that's one thing you are great at. Like, you know exactly how many booth spaces we have, how much we need to charge. That way, the way you have everything set up, it's not 100% dependent on ticket sales. Because if you're depending 100% on ticket sales, you're probably going to fail.
So,
I mean, it's great. Everybody wants to help out your favorite local comic book store, your favorite local artist, your favorite nonprofit. But if you start cutting too many deals and giving away the farm for free, a lot of that burden's fallen on ticket sales, and either you're going to have to jack up your ticket prices to a ridiculous amount to try to cover your losses, or you're going to have not enough mouths in the building to cover all the stuff you gave away for free. You know how that old saying about drug dealers, never get high on your own supply? The more stuff you give away, no matter how good it makes you feel, unless you can shoulder the financial burden of that, you're just making your climb uphill to a profit or even a break-even point more and more difficult. So I know sometimes it feels good to cut that local artist a great deal or give him a booth for free, but just remember, that's money that you're going to have to make up somewhere else.
Yeah, the rises and falls of the economy, maybe that you touched on something there that is maybe the main focus here. Ticket prices. Ticket prices are what will immediately be affected by the rise and fall of the economy right away. You might get a year where your local economy is high and you've got a ticket price, let's say, keep it very simple, $25. $25 ticket price. And you can sell in an up economy a lot of tickets, mm-hmm. and you can make a lot of money. The next year, you don't know if that economy is going to be up. So maybe don't budget with the idea that you're going to sell that many tickets. Maybe budget with the idea that you're going to sell what you did the year before. Just look at like a 2% growth rate. And don't look at the growth rate based on what we did last year. Look at the growth rate of your goal, your budget from last year. Try to raise that by 2%. So if the economy does fall and tickets are at the same rate, you're still going to be able to get it done, but you're not going to make as much profit. Don't treat the profit as the standard. Treat the profit as whatever your goal was and try to grow that goal. And recognize that every market and every event, every store, every everything is going to hit a plateau.
And there's always going to be bumps on the road, too. Nothing ever runs 100% smoothly. You're going to have up years. You're going to have down years, which is why, you know, making sure, to me, making sure that your vendor prices are cool, that your sponsorships are cool, that everything is in line, and you're not giving everything away, because eventually you're going to have a down year where you're going to wish you had that little extra cash coming in.
And maybe, I guess, maybe in a future show we'll take more time to break this down, but talking about the spreadsheets and the vendors and knowing what everything is ahead of time, that's the way that we look at things and the way that we operate is we break down. So we spread the risk out. So it's not just that we need this from guests and we need this from tickets and we need this from sponsors and we need this from vendors. There's no one thing that if tickets don't sell, if we don't sell however many tickets, we're going to lose everything. It's a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, and a little bit here. It's all evenly spread. And so what we do with the vendors is we actually look at what the cost for the venue is. So what our rentals are. And we take that rental cost and we look at the square footage. We look at the actual layout. And we figure out how much each one of those spaces is costing to rent the facility. So we're basically trying to just pay for rental based on the vendor spaces. So then that way, if we fall short, we're not falling short for the entirety of the expense. We're not falling short for everything because we base it all on vendors. Now, most shows don't do it based on vendors. Most shows do it based on tickets, like you were saying. So if in your mind, everything will be paid for by the ticket sales, and you take the cost of the venue rental and the cost of the celebrity lineup and the cost of the transportation and the cost of everything else, and if you try to pay for that all with the tickets, if you have a down year, the economy's bad.
That's a dangerous gamble.
It's a death sentence.
Yeah.
If you don't sell the tickets, it's over. So spread your risk around. Figure out how much each square foot is that you have. Each sellable square foot, put a dollar figure on it. Figure out what each booth costs you.
Including pipe and drape pipe and electric and
chairs,
all that stuff.
Anything that you have to pay for that space. Whether it's just a square footage or whether it's pipe and drape and all the extras, whatever you're selling, figure out the price tag so you know you need to get this in order to cover the venue. And then that way you're minimizing your risk in all other aspects. And that's something that we've done really well. I don't know if every show is doing that, but if you're not, I have heard shows. I know not every show is doing that because I have heard from people who the entire show, they are just putting an arbitrary number on their vendor space. They're saying, hey, my friend did a show here and they charged this for a vendor space. And maybe that show, they had a great deal from the venue. Maybe they were doing it in a different size room that didn't cost as much. And so people aren't taking into consideration that a venue in a ballroom at a hotel has a different rate than a convention center. Maybe a convention center in one city, the actual municipality that owns it is giving those people a discount on the rate. You may not be receiving that. And so suddenly, if your friend is selling... Again, just throwing out random numbers. If your friend has a show where he's selling $100 booth spaces, but he's doing it in a hotel ballroom, and his overhead is low, and you're doing a convention center show, and you want to, he charged $100 for booths, I'm going to charge $100 for booths. But it turns out that the square footage and the cost of your booth is going to be $133. You're going to lose $33 on every booth you sell.
At least.
And that's if you sold everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't sell everything, then you lost the $33 on each one you built and all that other square footage, you lost the whole $133. So now you got to make up all of that lost money on the floor in ticket sales. And those are the things that keep me up at night.
I mean,
those are the reasons I have 19 spreadsheets.
I mean, it's a maddening process because every dollar that doesn't come in is ones you have to try to figure out how to make up in other ways. Because the goal of all this is obviously to make a little money, but at the very least to break even. Nobody wants to put on an event that loses them money every
right.
year.
And that may be the other part of this. How do you stay ahead of competition and saturation, and how do you adjust the economy? A lot of people may put events on with the purpose of making money. I've always been a believer that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it, which is why my goal at the end of every year, even with 19 spreadsheets and all of these mathematical equations that I try to put together with the vendor floor and with guests and with tickets, ultimately my goal is to have an event next year.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you set up that as your goal, if your goal is to continue this event in your market as long as possible, you're probably going to have a better time and probably a higher success rate than just saying, I want to make $1 million on this event.
Yeah, that's not a great way to look at it. But as you said, you want to have an event next year, which means at the very least, you got to break even.
You got to break even and have enough to start next year.
Yep.
So you have to make some money, even if you reinvest it. Like looking at what we did, we had a great year last year. And I don't know if that was up economy or if that was that we booked really well or it was just 5 years and so now people really trust our show. Whatever it was, we had an up year. Now, we could have taken that approach of, and this plays into all three of these aspects, all three prongs of this question. We could have taken last year's show and said, okay, great show, up year, more people than ever before. We're going to raise ticket prices. We're going to raise vendor prices. We're going to raise everything just because we had a great show last year. That's not what our intent is, and that's not what we did. This year we actually did, for the first time in 4 years, have to raise prices on vendor booths, not on ticket sales, but on vendor booths. We had to raise it because the costs associated with putting the vendor floor together have gone up.
Yep.
And so when our costs go up, if we're using the equation of trying to break even with that to spread the risk, then now those have to go up to offset the raises that we've had to deal with. But at the same time, we're able to take our ticket prices and say, you know what? We're freezing that, and we're going to see if we can do what we did last year. We're trying to provide a service, more or less.
And the other great thing is we didn't go up substantially on vendor.
No, yeah.
It was a small increase, and most people that have seen success over the past 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, depending on how long they've been coming to our shows, that is worth it for them. So we didn't like double our prices overnight, which we have seen done in that little comic forum where like, oh, last year it was $150. Now it's $350 for a booth or whatever the case may be. Like, that's a big jump. That's a giant leap. The idea is if you want to keep people coming back and keep people happy, if you do have to go up on prices, make it as minimal as possible. Because if you do double, triple, quadruple your price on tickets or pictures or vendor spaces or whatever the case, whatever it is that you're trying to sell, that is not going to make people happy. And at the end of the day, whether it's a vendor or a customer, your goal is to make them happy.
So I want to really quickly, and this is going to be a longer episode because we have the guest announcement still to come, but I want to turn this a little bit into something that we are considering right now that is part of that whole like staying ahead of competition, saturation, and economy standpoints. We touched on a little bit with our vendor room, our panel room, rather. So for the last few years, we've had a gigantic panel room at our show. 2,500 seats, a giant stage, sound and lighting, video board, all of that stuff. A really big production. But over the last few years, we've noticed a trend that even when you have the big names, when you have the headliners doing their panels, I don't want to say people don't care about panels right now, but we're not seeing a lot of the people coming to our show taking part in the panel activities.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's sort of like if I happen to be there, I'll go. But if I'm on the floor doing something, I'm not going to leave to go see that. It's sort of the feeling I get where it's like, that's kind of cool, but I'm not going to inconvenience myself or make a plan to attend.
So last year, our largest panel utilized about 10% of our entire panel room. That was the biggest. The biggest was about 10% usage. Everything else was really below that. And oddly, we didn't have bad panels. We had good guests. We had a great panel with Michael Rooker. Got down off the stage and conducted his own interviews.
Yeah, but when you got 3,000 seats, if you only get 300 people there, even though that's a big crowd, it still looks visually like a not fun interactive.
Well, not just that, but for a show like ours where we're sacrificing a lot of room.
Yes.
For something that is not being taken advantage of. Like a couple of years ago, we even tried to do free movies in that panel room. Movies that attached to our guests. So we had Chris Sarandon in, the voice of Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas, and we got the rights to air The Nightmare Before Christmas, and we did it and had like 8 people show up to see the free movie on a big screen. Like, it was movie theater with Chris Sarandon, and we had like 8 people.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
I think part of it has to do, just in talking to a couple of people today about it, There's really not a lot of new stuff as far as panels go. I think a lot of people are under the impression that all panels at all Comic-Cons are going to be like Hall H at San Diego Comic-Con, where Kevin Feige is going to come out and tell you what Phase 5 of the MCU is going to be, and they're going to play a trailer. That's not what all shows are.
That's not what 98% of shows are.
Well, 99.9%. There's one, maybe two shows that get to do that kind of thing. And we are not one of them. So for us, it's basically a Q&A session. It's an interview that for most guests, you can just find on YouTube.
Well, I think with the popularity of podcasts,
yeah,
you know, most of these guys are sitting down for hour-long, two-hour-long, in-depth interviews where it used to be something you got in five-minute bits on Jimmy Kimmel or whatever. Now is readily available at your fingertips anytime you want it. So
there's like an oversaturation of access to people that we didn't used to have, and so that maybe has taken the edge off it. For a show like ours, where we're sacrificing
literally a third of our floor space.
Yes, for this, we've heard from a few people this year who are interested in doing something more dynamic, who are talking about maybe like hosting game tournaments, creating walkable mazes, escape rooms, things that it feels like more than a couple hundred people would be able to take advantage of. The downside for us, and this is for everybody, it doesn't, again, it's not one size fits all. Your venue is different than our venue, is different than the next venue. Every venue is different. Our venue doesn't offer us an opportunity to duplicate the panel room and use that floor space for some of the game tournaments, walkable mazes, escape rooms, those sort of things. It's one or the other. You either get the panel room or you get the ability to do all these cool interactive things. And so we are now at a crossroads as we decide, are we moving away from panels and moving more towards interactive displays, or are we going to stay with the panel structure and just hope that it gets better this year?
And that's a tough question because you really don't know the answer until you see what the turnout is. Like, we know what the turnout for the panels are. If we change that into a full-blown game room or whatever, we don't know what that's going to bring.
Yep.
It could bring 1,000 people. It could bring 8 people where we're wasting the space even more than we were before. So, I mean, once we make that decision, there's no turning back. That's what we got this year.
Yeah, and those are the sort of things that you have to sort, like, You got to figure that out soon too. Like, we have to know now what we're doing because there's a lot of other elements that go into.
Yeah, like if you use that for a magic room, let's say, you have to get certain things to make it a legit tournament. Whatever, you have to make sure there's cards, people, master wizards, whatever you want to call them.
Judges. That's what they're called. Judges.
Oh, I thought they had a cool name. Excuse me.
No.
You have to get all these things lined up ahead of time. It's not like you can show up Friday night and be like, we're going to do this.
Well, beyond that, we have to, like, from my standpoint, I have to redo the entire layout. Like, we have to move things around.
Yeah,
we have to rebuild things. We have to see now changing again that equation for, okay, well, now for this other floor space, how are we going to accommodate these things? How are we going to make this work? But there's another element that just popped in my head with it. there are a lot of guests now who are eliminating the panel part from their contracts.
Yeah.
They don't, they're not interested in doing the panels anymore. They would prefer to be at their booth meeting fans, taking pictures and signing autographs.
Which is understandable, because that's another thing about a panel that a lot of people who are pumped for them kind of forget about, is the more time they're away from their table, the less money they're going to make, like Michael Rooker loves one-on-one interaction. So he got his own mic and conducted his own interview. But most people don't have the kind of energy to run around and say hello to 300.
Dude is a different animal.
Yeah. It's just not something that is humanly possible to hop off stage, run around like a mad person, and shake every 300 people's hands and ask them a question individually. So you are asking said guest to sacrifice money and one-on-one time with the people they actually want to meet, because that's how you keep that brand going. So, I mean, there's a lot of little different aspects to look at it, and there's not one easy answer for any of it, or else we probably would have made that answer by now.
And if you've forgotten anyway, what we're talking about, it's GeekedCon, Shreveport's Comic-Con, coming up this August. You can find us at geekcon.com or on the GeekedCon mobile app as we try to figure out our own issues for this year in real time on a podcast, because that's the way that we do it in 2020. But moving on from all that, hopefully that conversation will help somebody and not confuse them even more.
I'm confused now.
Great. So am I. Well, I got to go rub my spreadsheets on my face and feel good about things.
I don't think that's going to answer our panel room question, but maybe a paper cup with some bad ink in it will give you some a vision.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. So moving on, it's the part that you wanted to make a big deal out of. You've been demanding to do this for the last, 6 weeks.
Yes.
You want to make a guest announcement on the podcast.
For the podcast.
That will not be announced anywhere else for the next couple of days.
At least.
It will marinate here.
Yes.
On the podcast. So go ahead. The floor is yours.
All right. Our next guest announcement. Gregory, are you ready for this? Are you ready?
Yeah.
This guy is a star. Star. He's had his own TV series. He's recently been featured in a movie. He's got his own podcast universe, quite literally. This man is a superhuman, and I'm pumped that he's coming to Shreveport for GeekCon 2020. You might have seen him most recently in Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. You might remember him from the great TV show on AMC, Comic Book Men. Hell, you might even listen to his podcast with Mike Zapsik on the Shared Universe podcast network, I guess is what they call it. But our next guest announcement is the one and only, the lovely short guy, Ming Chen.
Yes, Ming Chen from Comic Book Men on AMC. That's probably what we most know him for. But he's been a part of the View Askew Kevin Smith universe since 1999-ish, appearing in Dogma.
I forgot he was in Dogma.
Yeah, he's been in, he was in Vulgar as well, which is kind of an offshoot of that universe. Jay and Silent Bob, super groovy cartoon movie. Got to know Kevin Smith after running a fan site dedicated to the movie Clerks.
Yep.
That's how he became part of the Kevin Smith world.
He runs Kevin's websites.
Which is actually hilarious to talk to him about, because we actually got to run into Ming in New Orleans late last year.
Yeah, at Big Easy Con. That's how this all started.
Because he literally came up to us and was like, "Hey guys, I love your show. I love GeekCon." We were like, "Well, we love you, Ming Chen. So you want to come to our show?" And yeah, Ming Chen will be coming to Shreveport this August. He now joins the already announced guests of Lexi Rabe, Morgan Stark from Avengers Endgame, and Christopher McDonald, Shooter McGavin.
Yes.
So three guests now, and this announcement will live here just on the podcast for a couple of days.
And if you need a little Ming Chen in your life, like I said, he's in Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. He's got a speaking part in this movie. In fact, he's got a little name tag and placard and the whole thing. So, yeah, I'm pretty pumped Ming is coming to town. It's going to be awesome. I hope he brings his Ewok village so I can steal it. That's a personal thing.
You can listen to a whole bunch of Ming Chen as well on the Shared Universe podcast network, because they have multiple recording studios now, and he is helping to make the podcast dreams of many come to life. But the Comic Book Men's Ming Chen coming to GeekCon 2020.
Yes.
All right, we got anything else?
No, that's all I got.
You finally got to make the guest announcements on the podcast. So.
Yeah, I'm happy.
And in all honesty, if people do rate this and get other people to subscribe, if we can get like all the rating numbers up, if we can get a bunch of comments on like iTunes up.
If we really blow it up, I'll tell you who our headliner is.
Well, we'd have to really blow it up. I don't know what that number looks like, but we'd have to really blow it up for that to happen. But
all you have to do is make me happy. Don't worry about Greg. But be sure to give us 5 stars and leave a review.
I am in charge of the buttons to turn on and off microphones.
I am in charge of our website.
I'm sorry they couldn't hear you because I turned your mic off.
You can't shut down the website. That's my domain. I'll post what I want.
I'll take a baseball bat to the back room where all the computers are set up.
You'll never get my MacBook. You'll have to pry it from my cold, dead hands.
Somebody literally walked in your office and got on your social media earlier today. How hard could it be?
Well, that's because I left my office open.
Which you do a lot. I could easily get in there. All right, you know what? We'll handle this off the air. Thank you for listening to another mediocre attempt at a podcast. It's the Con Men Podcast.
Yep.